Hello and welcome to the Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, host for the show and founder of the UK charity Yes to Life, helping people with cancer to understand and access the many benefits of integrative medicine for nearly two decades. In the growth in popularity and credibility amongst complementary therapies used in cancer care, acupuncture has proved to be a leader, having much to offer and increasing evidence of its effectiveness. Beverly de Valois has been a key figure in driving this movement forward and has recently published a book to promote and underpin good practice in acupuncture in cancer care. It's called Acupuncture and Cancer Survivorship. And speaking to Beverly in West London.
Hi Beverly, welcome to the Yes Life Show.
Hi Robin, thank you for inviting me. It's a real privilege to speak to listeners.
Great, it's great to have you as my guest. Yours is a name I've heard often over the years. It's the first time we've actually spoken, I believe.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, okay.
So, you've got an enormous raft of experience under your belt working with acupuncture, working alongside mainstream medicine, researching acupuncture, supporting people with cancer. And during that time, acupuncture has gone from being a kind of weird alternative therapy from the Far East to a respected modality for many conditions with the evidence to underpin its effects. And I understand that even the mode of action that almost universally used to raise eyebrows is beginning to acquire a scientific basis. So all that said, the idea that sticking little needles in the skin is proper medicine is still quite a stretch for many people, be they clinicians or patients. And I wonder, what's your number one strategy for winning hearts and minds?
Well, it depends who I'm talking to. So I guess if I'm talking to medical people, then it's making them aware of the research that's been done, because that is what they like. They like the evidence base. They're a little bit interested in the mechanism, although it's not always clear what the mechanism is, but as you say, there's more and more information about that. For patients, for people with cancer, it's about, reassuring them that acupuncture isn't scary. It's a bit unfortunate that we have to use the word needles. And and particularly, I've worked a lot with particularly breast cancer patients who have been referred to my studies and who say, they really have thought twice about having acupuncture because it involves needles. Once you get them in, once you get the patients in rather than the needles in and you introduce them to the needles, they love it, because acupuncture is actually very, very relaxing. So the needles aren't like needles used for other medical interventions.
No.
So they're very fine. We're not going into a vein or deep into a muscle. So it can be a very relaxing process. So sometimes I demonstrate the needles to them, but usually once I get them, just giving them a sample of the treatment helps them to get used to it.
Right. Yeah, experience counts. Yeah, well, I've had quite a bit of acupuncture over the years here and there. Yeah, I can attest to what you say. It's actually quite pleasant. Okay, so you're focusing very much on using acupuncture to support those who've been through cancer, to support them in making a good recovery in the longer term. So two questions, really. What made you want to work with people with cancer particularly, and why did you decide to specialize in this particular aspect, the recovery?
Well, way back before I trained as an acupuncturist, I read a book about a woman's cancer journey. And when I got to the last page, I just knew that that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to work with cancer. And at the time, I was either studying to be or just starting off practicing as an aromatherapist. And I started working. I managed to, after knocking on many, many doors, managed to get a place working with the Macmillan Oncology and Palliative Care team at the North Middlesex Hospital, doing aromatherapy for the inpatients on the ward.
Really?
So that was how I started. And then I was doing that while I was training to be an acupuncturist. And when I qualified, I was recruited by the Linda Jackson McMillan Center, which was a cancer information and support center allied to Mount Vernon Hospital, which is in Greater London. And I wanted to practice acupuncture there. And there was some resistance because, as you say, back in that many years ago, it was kind of a weird and wonderful thing. So I was very adamant and persistent about wanting to be able to practice acupuncture with people with cancer. And the medical director at the time, Professor Jane Maher, said, well, if you want to do this, then you need to do an evaluation. You need to do some research. So I was taken over by the supportive oncology research team, and we did a study on doing using acupuncture to manage breast cancer treatment-related hot flashes.
Okay.
That was we had good results from that. That was using kind of body acupuncture, and then we wanted to look at a way of doing acupuncture that was simpler to deliver. So we did a study on using ear acupuncture, a standardized ear acupuncture in a group setting, and that became the subject of my PhD. And when we set up those studies at the time, we received wisdom about tamoxifen or the adjuvant hormonal therapies was that after 6 months of taking them, the symptoms would alleviate.
Right.
So we set up the studies to recruit women who had been taking tamoxifen or other adjuvant hormonal therapies for at least 6 months. And that is how that kind of set the seeds for how I got involved in treating people post-treatment.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and because every kind of every study we set up afterwards, we had this kind of period that we recruited people who were 6 months post-treatment.
Ooh.
So that is how I built up that group.
Right, and the received wisdom to that not be true, of course, that the women with tamoxifen go on suffering the symptoms as long as they keep taking it.
Indeed.
Yeah, all right. Anyway, but you had some success with that as well.
Indeed, yes. Yes. So we found that with, and it's interesting, there's now lots of studies on using acupuncture to manage breast cancer treatment related hot flashes. And they tend to come up with the same results that, about eight treatments on a weekly basis will reduce the severity or the frequency by about 50%. I mean, these are all averages when you're talking back into, but there would be a noticeable difference for people suffering from hot flashes. So,
Well, I see the research into acupuncture as a big win for patients because the thorny issue of the mode of action of a therapy, it's right out there the front with medics like, well, we don't understand it, therefore it must be rubbish, is pretty much the attitude. And of course, patients want to know whether it works or not. They may like to know the mode of action for sure in order to help them make decisions. But at the end of the day, if somebody who's got the same side effects as they have says it's bloody marvellous, they'll give it a go, won't they? Especially if it's completely safe. So, acupuncture seemed to get in the door long before the mode of action was even approached. You know, everybody knew that it actually worked, even though nobody understood it, which is genius, I think. It's actually excellent for patients. So very happy that happened. And I think it moved the goalposts for everybody's therapies, you know, we don't have to be able to prove how it works in order to show that it does. So I was pleased by that. Yeah, okay. So you're clearly enormously committed to this work and investing considerable energy pushing it forward. You currently have a new book on the topic and you're opening two specialist clinics in London, I understand. So I'd like to talk about your book first. It's called Acupuncture and Cancer Survivorship. it's a book for practitioners. And would it be fair to say that its primary goal is to equip acupuncturists already trained with the knowledge to safely support those recovering from cancer, is to make that move from being an acupuncturist to being one who can work with cancer safely?
Yes, indeed. I'm really trying to aim it. I tried to make it relevant to any type of acupuncturist. So whether they're a physio acupuncturist or a fully trained classical or traditional acupuncturist. My mission in life is really to spread awareness of cancer survivorship and the issues associated with cancer survivorship. And as I'm an acupuncturist, I want also to spread the word about how acupuncture can support people who are experiencing the consequences of cancer treatment. So it is very much a book that's designed to do those things, to take the trained acupuncturist, as you say, into the state of becoming an acupuncturist who can understand the issues surrounding cancer survivorship and support their patients that knowledge.
Excellent. And so what you're saying is that despite the fact, because it's been around so long, there are inevitably lots of different flavors of acupuncture these days, your book will be just as interesting, whatever particular school of acupuncture you're a part of.
Yes, and I really wanted to write it from a general point of view rather than a specific style of acupuncture. Obviously, it's got the flavor. When I trained, I learned two different systems at the same time. I kind of grew up bilingual in acupuncture.
All right. Okay.
But I really want to, you know, I really believe it is more generic and wider than that. But what something that's very interesting is that now that the book reviews are coming in, it's being reviewed by professionals from other therapies who say that even though they're not acupuncturists, it's a very good text for understanding about cancer survivorship and the issues. And so it's kind of going beyond even acupuncture.
Well, I'm glad you brought that in, because it's one of the things that really struck me looking through the book is that, well, okay, yes, a lot of it is hardcore information for acupuncturists about where you stick the needle in, you know. But in amongst that, there's a wealth of other stuff, which is much more to do with understanding the situation of the patient and how to manage them, understanding all the treatments that are going on and what they're likely to do to the patient, what they're likely to be suffering from. All this stuff, it's immensely detailed in that way and comprehensive. So I could imagine, yeah, any therapist reading that and learning a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I wanted to really give a clear picture of the context and what it's like for cancer survivors so that practitioners could just slot in their practice into that kind of environment and help those people, whatever their therapy is.
Right. Well, you've done a great job. So right at the beginning, in the introduction, you use a couple of quotes to create the context for what's to follow. And in fact, you say the underlying philosophy of this book is encapsulated in them. One of them which stuck with me is one that reads, evidence-based medicine is not cookbook medicine. External clinical evidence can inform, but can never replace individual clinical expertise. So, in essence, evidence has to be a great thing, but I'm right with you. My view would be that both clinicians and patients have been oppressed by the tyranny of EBM in recent decades. And the quote seems to restore evidence to its proper role. What made you home in on this particular point?
That is a quote from Professor David Sackett, who is the kind of father of evidence-based medicine. And I think what's really important there is kind of that two-thirds of his definition of evidence-based medicine has been ignored. So the focus has been on best research, best evidence-based research, which has typically been the randomized controlled trial. But his definition of evidence-based medicine also included, clinical experience and patient preference. So I felt that was important. I guess all of my research career, I've been fighting against the RCT, the randomized controlled trial.
Yeah.
And for various reasons. And so I liked that quotation because it was the full definition of evidence-based medicine, which included the bits that are often ignored.
Yeah, very much so. To me, evidence-based medicine, as it's practiced at the moment, with one third of it, is the tool of business. It's the tool of business. You know, it's like an exclusive club. Nobody else can afford to get in. It doesn't really work with anything other than patentable substances. Yeah, so it works very well for business, but it's not good for patients, I don't think, at all. You're right. You've missed out two-thirds of the picture, and very important two-thirds as well. I mean, I'd say those three arms of the clinical relationship are all equally key. I mean, they seem all important to me, and yet two of them I got forgotten.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavorful health drink. Perfect at home or on the go. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com by the end of January and get 15% off any of our award-winning supplements. Super supplements for a super you.
Nature's Medicine for Modern Living, a people and plants dialogue hosted by Sophie.Health. At Sophie, we bring together experts and voices who rarely cross paths. Our quest is to illuminate the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age. Join us to explore new boundaries of digital personalized medicine with deep roots in the natural world. And hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.Health, reconnecting people and plants.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
So, it seems to be a bid, your book, to help clinicians to regain some autonomy and escape from what you call the cookbook medicine, which must be bad for clinicians. I'm sure they don't enjoy being at the mercy of the computer. They get all this training and everything, and then they just have to do what they're told, it seems to me now. Otherwise, they're not using best practice. Anyway, I think that all of this has had a bad effect, particularly in the world of complementary medicine, practices like acupuncture, because the effect's been to discourage practitioners from helping people who are in the most need. You know, people with cancer, you probably can't equal any other condition that needs as much support as people with cancer do, and yet the practitioner's been frightened away. Resulting in patients feeling abandoned, uncared for, and quickly they feel hopeless, which is the worst possible scenario for recovery.
Indeed, yeah.
Yeah, so more power to you for putting that right at the front of your book and saying this is the right direction for medicine.
Thank you.
So having said all that about the evidence, you're nonetheless, of course, an enthusiastic researcher of evidence. And but for good reasons, because as I said at the beginning, there's nothing wrong with evidence. It's good stuff. You want it. So anyway, can you summarise what you've achieved in the arena of evidence?
Well, I haven't done an RCT. So
okay. You're working up to it?
I think, but I've been more interested in clinical observation and service evaluation. And one of our big achievements that came out of, I spoke about the study that, the second study that I did, which was ear acupuncture in a group setting. On the basis of that study, the Linda Jackson McMillan Center set up a service for breast cancer patients. It ran for 15 years, and right. It was only closed down by COVID. During that time, because we were so influenced by Professor Jane Marr, who always said, always collect data and always assess things. And we collected data for all of those years. And last year, we were able to publish a service evaluation using 15 years of data.
Awesome.
Which is a big achievement. I don't think there's another paper in the complementary medicine field, and that's a very broad statement, that has got that wealth of data behind it.
Oh.
That is quite a big achievement. But also, it's interesting because I guess I always thought that having not done randomized control trials, I wouldn't have any influence. You know, none of my work would be influential. But we've published a lot. I do a lot of dissemination through conferences, and our work. And I can't say it's my work because it's it takes a team to do research. But it's gone around the world, and I get messages from people, from practitioners around the world to say that, our publications, our work has inspired, has helped them to set up services, or has inspired them to help their cancer patients much more effectively. So that's important. It seeps out, yeah.
Something to be proud of, yeah. Great. Do you think the notion is seeping in that RCTs, of course, are totally and utterly inappropriate for something that's got no safety issues whatsoever and a long proven track record of being one of the safest interventions on the planet? Therefore, effectiveness is the only thing you're looking for, and it's simply not warranted to have these hugely expensive trials in order to prove that this thing improves people's lives.
It depends where you are in the world. So there are some major countries who certainly don't, like the States and Australia, will no longer fund studies that are randomized controlled trials using sham interventions.
Okay.
But in the UK, we seem to be very traditional, are we? Certainly, the reason that I've never done an RCT is because in the UK, they've been very stringently keen on having a sham arm, a control arm,
right.
Which makes it very difficult. So something that's really important in the UK was last year, the National Institute for Clinical Health Excellence, NICE, published a framework for real-world evidence.
Great.
And that was kind of the first official acknowledgement that evidence other than evidence for randomized controlled trials was valid. And so this tied in nicely with the publication of the paper that I just referenced about
your 15-year study.
Yeah, because that is real world evidence. And I think there is a move towards understanding that how something performs in clinic rather than how it performs in a very unrealistic lab situation, if you like, is important as well. It's just a movement towards
Well, as it is significant, I didn't know they'd taken that step. Of course, I've heard about the move towards real-world evidence, and there's been some advocates for it, which I've been very excited about, of course. It's a good name for it because it actually sounds better than randomized controlled trials. Actually, this is real-world evidence, you know. And that's what I think about it. Randomized controlled trials have not given us great success in many fields. They're good for some things, but you know, it's not as fantastic as it's made out to be. We quite often see randomized controlled trials producing blockbuster drugs that turn out to be a total nightmare just a couple of years later. And so it doesn't work for whatever reason, and there's lots of reasons. So I think real-world evidence sounds very palatable. And I was thinking, when you say about this study, this 15-year study within the NHS, to me, this is what the NHS should be doing for us. It should be finding out what works, because the NHS has got a proper interest in finding out what works. It's not going to be about making a ton of money. They're going to do it because they're going to save them money to actually find things that work. And so it must be, you know, comparatively peanuts to do your study compared to a full randomized controlled trial. And yet it produces some very significantly good data, I'm sure, on what actually works.
Indeed. Yeah. And I think the irony is that this was that service was not funded by the NHS. It was funded by charitable funding. So
Right. That is irony. Indeed. Yeah. But when are the government and the NHS going to pick it up and say, look, it's time we found out what actually works here?
I can't tell you. I don't know.
No. All right. Anyway, so we haven't got the time to go through your book in much detail, but I wonder if you could just summarize the scope and the intent of the book. So what are you trying to achieve with the book?
Okay. What I wanted to do was I wanted to give, if you like, a 360-degree view of the issues of cancer survivorship and how acupuncture's role in that. So for just about every topic I discuss, I talk about it from the Western medicine, the conventional medicine perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I then talk about it from the East Asian medicine perspective. I then look in depth at the research that's been done in relationship to acupuncture. I talk about my clinical practice and what I've learned through the years of treating using acupuncture and the clinical tips to help people. And then a really significant aspect of the book is I really wanted to give voice to the patient experience. So I wanted cancer survivors to be able to have their experience communicated and their
straight to practitioners. And
of acupuncture. Yeah. So nearly every chapter has an extended case study at the end of it. Chapter 14 is dedicated. It's a very long case study about the woman who really inspired me to write the book. And I'll come back to that in a second.
Okay.
And then there's kind of shorter examples throughout the book that I've called vignettes. So when I did those case studies, I worked with those patients gave their permission for me to write those case studies to communicate those details. Sometimes they contributed, they wrote bits of it, but certainly they all read and approved what I wrote. So so it kind of has some validity in conveying the patient voice and their experience.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, as I said, my feeling about the book overall, immense detail, all the potential treatments, consequences. It's kind of hard to imagine a more comprehensive book on the topic, as far as I can tell.
But that's kind of what I intended to do.
Well, there you go. Well, I think you succeeded. So, and I'm not an acupuncturist, but, it's very impressive.
UK Health Radio. Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Delightful news, air travelers. Going in and out of airports without getting sick can be challenging. Time to take charge of the air you breathe with Nasal Guard. Nasal Guard topical gel defends by blocking harmful airborne particles and viruses. Try Nasal Guard for air travelers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about Nasal Guard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
A few things I noticed on the way. Well, one of them was about how many of the spheres of human experience acupuncture can be supportive in. Do you want to say a little bit about that?
And it's always interesting when people ask me about, and I was interviewed by a journalist yesterday, and she said, you know, what does acupuncture treat? And people think of, very physical things like, right, you know, hot flashes and pain and things like that. But it works, you know, it's just a very whole person treatment. And so if you are giving acupuncture to someone, you're not just changing the physical behavior of the body. You're not inviting the physical aspects of the body to change, but it has an effect on the mental and the emotional life as well. And so in one treatment you can each acupuncture point has what we call many functions.
Oh.
So you can use an acupuncture point, a particular one called pericardium 6, which is on the wrist. It's typically used for nausea and vomiting. So it's very good when people are going through chemotherapy treatment to address nausea and vomiting. But that same point is also very good for calming people. So it's very good for anxiety. So in one point, you've got something that addresses nausea and vomiting, but it also deals with anxiety. It helps people to sleep better. It can be very elegant in that way.
Right.
Where you don't need to use a whole lot of points to address wider issues.
Yeah. Well, that is fantastic in the case of people with cancer, because, of course, people with cancer are not suffering from one issue ever, are they? It's like, you know, they have the in spades, all these different things they've got. So they don't sleep properly and they're anxious about their next appointment. And, all of that's going on with the hot flashes and the bit of pain in the joints and heaven knows what else. There's so many issues that can come up. So Yeah, things that treat multiple issues at once is kind of genius.
Indeed. Yeah. One of the things that I discovered through all the years of my work and which is encapsulated in the book is this kind of process that you can help people in a much more long-term way. And so the model that I have is that people have acupuncture and that reduces their symptoms so they feel better. But one of the very interesting things that acupuncturists very, very frequently hear from their patients is patients come back and say, I've got more energy. And part of that is because they feel better because they haven't got so many symptoms. But something about acupuncture improves people's energy. And so in one of the diagrams that I have done in the book, I call that process enabled coping. People can cope better. Once their symptoms go down, they have more energy, they have a better ability
to
cope.
It's a big change. You're right.
Yeah. And that has a wonderful knock-on effect because they start having the energy. They can be more motivated. They can start looking after themselves. They take better care of themselves. And you get this wonderful kind of long-term benefit, you know, the improved well-being. And this is one of the questions that certainly oncologists always ask me, well, you know, what happens when you stop having acupuncture treatment? Won't the hot flushes all come back or won't the symptoms all come back? No, because it's not like
taking a medication.
A medication. Yeah, it helps to, if you like, retrain the body and help the body to behave a bit differently so that it can maintain itself better. Yeah.
Well, it's particularly useful to have any kind of therapy that can help with energy issues, isn't it? Because they're so fundamental, aren't they? If you've got an energy issue, you don't have the energy to get yourself better either. It's like a vicious circle, and then you just go down with it. It makes you contract, withdraw. You don't even want to go and see a friend. Whatever it is, you know, you stop doing more and more things, and your world gets smaller.
Yeah.
And it's so fundamental to recovery is to get your energy in place so you're able to pursue life once more and have a future vision for your life.
Indeed. And in, you know, the research I've done, we've got countless comments about people who say, you know, acupuncture has helped me get my life back. You know, now I've got the energy. I can go back to work. I couldn't work, but I now can work full time. And, you know, it's enabling people. It's enabling people to live their lives.
Yeah, hugely important. Another sort of key message that popped out of the book at me, and one that I resonate with really strongly, is that something can always be done. There's no situation that's so entrenched, so hopeless that it warrants abandoning somebody.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a personal philosophy of yours that you're putting into the book there. I don't know if it was part of your acupuncture training or what. Maybe you want to say it.
Gosh, I can't remember where that came from. But certainly, you know, so I know that a lot of cancer survivors, they go back to their oncologist or their GP with symptoms and things. And they're told, sometimes almost brutally, you know, I've saved your life. You just have to live with the hot flushes now. There's nothing that we can do about that. But there, you know, acupuncture can help. And even if you can't solve the problem or cure the issue, you can make it manageable for people.
Yeah, very important. Yeah, it's a funny thing. I think it's sort of hung over, it's a bit of a old school idea that, you know, you save somebody's life, that's good enough. And they should be grateful for having their life saved, even if their life's not worth having once they've got it, because it's so painful or so, you know, so difficult. And of course, quality of life is every bit as important as staying alive. If you haven't got any quality of life, there isn't any point in being alive.
No, indeed. Yeah.
But I think that's beginning to sink in now. But, it's taken a long time. I mean, you know, it's like the change in attitude towards giving chemotherapy at the end of life. That's begun to happen as they realize that this is just something they do. They know it's not going to save anybody's life. It just makes their last month hell. And so they've started to advise people not to bother, which is actually compassionate to do that. I mean, chemotherapy is so unkind to human beings that you don't want to spend your last month dealing with it. You know, you want to, there are much better things to do.
Yeah.
So I'm glad it is finally arriving. We've been exploring this book. It's clearly aimed at practitioners. Of course, in the long run, all of that will filter through to benefit patients as more practitioners start to work with those who've got cancer. But you're also on a mission to educate patients about the potential of acupuncture, I believe, and to provide resources in the form of, as I mentioned, two new clinics. Do you want to tell us about that?
Okay, so my book was a colossal piece of work.
It took me
13 years to write it. And that was, I mean, I wasn't working full time on that, but, and when lockdown happened, I decided I was going to finish my book, take a sabbatical and finish the book. And then once I finished the book, I had time and energy to do something else.
Well, yes.
And so I wanted to set up clinics where I could practice what I preached in a way. I'd gathered experience along the way doing the research studies at Mount Vernon, and my own private clinic, but I wanted to take it out into the world in a much broader sense. So I thought a good place to start would be central London, around Harley Street. And so I haven't set up my own clinics. My clinics are hosted.
Okay.
Because I don't want to be managing clinics. I want to be in clinic. And when I'm not in clinic, I want to be spreading the word about acupuncture and cancer survivorship. So so I have a clinic that I'm working from in Wimpole Street in central London.
Mm-hmm.
I'm there on Thursdays. And that has started up. In January, I start more locally to where I live in Uxbridge, in Greater London.
Right.
And that we're opening a second clinic there. The first clinic in Wimpole Street is at the London Acupuncture Clinic, and it can be found on the website. And the clinic in Uxbridge is Bridge to Health in Uxbridge. And I'll be there on Tuesdays seeing patients.
Right. So anybody can consult you.
Indeed.
Okay, very good. Well, the one thing that's obvious in all the things you've been telling us is the enormous drive you've got to make some progress in this area. I mean, not many people would stick at a book for 13 years and say they want some results a bit sooner, or they give up, you know, after the first couple. So what's behind all this, do you think? Why do you think you're so driven to want to bring the benefits of acupuncture to the world?
I don't know. You know, it just goes back to reading that first book about that woman's cancer journey and just feeling that I had a vocation and then just following that through and just finding doors that opened. I never started off thinking that I would have become a researcher. I didn't realize that even existed.
Right.
But it's just in trying to take acupuncture out to support people with cancer, that is what I had to do. And that has built up a kind of body of work and a credible body of work. And it just needs to be communicated, you know. As you can see, I'm at a stage in my life where I should probably be retiring, but this is just all coalesced at this point. And it needs to go out there, and I can do that now. I have the kind of networks and the structure to support that. So
excellent. Okay, well, look, maybe we can finish up by talking about the future. You're not giving up soon and retiring like you should be, as you say. What are the plans? What do you want to do in Fiji? Have you got more research in the pipeline, for example, or
we have the possibility of. I'm not going to do any kind of big research, but I do want to. I think we're thinking of setting up a kind of new service at Mount Vernon, and we're looking into that, an acupuncture for a specific specific cancer survivorship problem, which isn't well addressed. I don't want to go into details.
No, fair enough.
It's not. It's just being formulated at the moment. And certainly, I'll be working at my clinics and extending that work. And I'm really, I attend a lot of conferences. I'll be training acupuncturists and taking the message out. I've got a speaking calendar for next year where I'm going around Europe, spreading the word about acupuncture and cancer survivorship. So it will keep me busy.
Yeah, it sounds like it. You're not starting on another book just yet.
Not yet. My husband, I think, has very strong feelings about writing another book.
They're a love-hate endeavor, aren't they, books?
And certainly, you know, if I do another one, it will be an easy... I think the next one will be more aimed at cancer survivors themselves. I think so. That's what I would do if I were allowed to.
Yeah, okay. And, obviously, I think, it's pretty clear your work has changed attitudes towards acupuncture in oncology.
I certainly hope so, yeah.
Yeah, and particularly because you've done it inside hospitals with hospital patients as a key element, I think, to the whole thing. And it's not an easy nut to crack, changing attitudes in oncology. I think we can agree on, can't we?
Indeed, yeah.
It's very hard, but probably extremely important has been the fact you've been doing it on the inside, not trying to sort of bang on the door and say, look, we got something that works out here.
Yeah.
So kind of getting in the door was very important in the first place. And anyway, it's impressive what you've pulled off there. But of course, there are many other things that can help patients which are still outside the door. And personally, I want to see proper integration in this country as soon as possible. I think we're far behind what's been developed in other countries and far behind what's possible in terms of supporting people with cancer. There's largely still volunteer-run complementary therapy units, which there's no money being paid there. There's no real buy-in from the NHS for integrative medicine yet. Any ideas on strategies to bring more change in that area?
I don't know, because I think the NHS is really struggling at the moment. I'm not sure it's going to be open to much more innovation from us. But on the other hand, like I say, pockets exist where things can happen, and as I say, we're trying to introduce a new service at Mount Vernon, and I'm trying to take it onto different terms than it being, seen as a complementary therapy. I want to see it as integrated.
Right, as part of it, yes. That would be so great.
Yeah, we'll see if we can pull it off.
Well, you keep trying, excellent. Yeah. I mean, to be fair, attitudes are changing, but it's been such a slow process and it's so far behind, that it is tragic, because these are the people who need, as I say, who need the most support, are people with cancer.
Indeed, yeah.
And, they're literally doled out some of the most difficult treatments on the planet and given no support whatsoever. It's like inhuman. I really wanted to change, and attitudes are beginning to change. There's another generation of doctors coming along who, and particularly doctors from other cultures as well, who don't see integration as anything so wild. If you come from India, where they respect traditional medicine as well, then it doesn't feel strange introduce these things. So I think it is happening, but far, far too slow. So we need to all sort of make every effort to push as hard as we can to move it along.
Indeed.
Anyway, I really appreciate what you've done. I think it's fantastic. And, acupuncture actually stands out for the evidence it has and for the respect it gets as a useful tool. I mean, it's fantastic.
Indeed, yep. And it's enjoyable as well. I had a patient yesterday, a young woman with breast cancer, who just got up from the table and she said, I choose to have acupuncture. And, yes, it's another appointment, but it's something that I choose to do for myself. And I feel such joy when I've had acupuncture.
So important, so important. Marvellous. Well, there you are. There's a nice upbeat note to finish on. Thank you very much indeed, Beverly. It's been a very inspiring and interesting chat.
Thank you for having me. It's a great privilege. And I'm, you know, so keen to get my message out there. I'm grateful to you.
Thank you. All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye now.
Beverly asked that I let you know that she's offered you a generous 15% discount off her book using the code YTLBV15. YTLBV15. This code is valid for 15% off acupuncture and cancer survivorship on the website uk.singingdragon.com only. So that's uk.singingdragon.com only. This offer is valid until the 26th of January 2024, and it can't be used in combination with any other offer. As usual, terms and conditions apply. Thanks for joining me today. It's great to know that so many of you are listening and finding the show of interest and of benefit. I plan to be here again next week with another expert guest, exploring the latest developments in integrative medicine for cancer in the next Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.